Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We are Baltimore Positive. We are positively here on day three, which is really day two. We'll get back to that. A cup of Super Bowl. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. I got Raven Scratch-Offs. Magic 8-Ball Scratch-Offs. They just look like, because they're purple. I've been saying Raven Scratch-Offs for 6 months. These are the freshies here. We're going to be on Thursday at State Fair in Catonsville, on Friday at Cooper's North with some gumbo for the Super Bowl and all that good stuff. We call it a cup of Super Bowl. It's all for the Maryland Food Bank. And locally, I'm actually going up the street to Hamilton to donate the canned goods that come today for the Maryland Food Bank. We're at Coco's Pub. We're in beautiful Lauraville. You become part of the furniture over here. John Hoey is here from the Y. He's taking time out after I stood him up at Gertrude's last month to come over. It's always good to see you, man. How are you?
Good to see you. I'm doing well. It's, I'll meet you at any good restaurant. There's a lot of them in Baltimore.
Well, so. I saw that crab cake you devoured here, that gigantic 11-ounce softball that you were doing here.
I may skip dinner here.
Well, for you and the Y, on a day like this, it's Super Bowl week. It's a cup of Super Bowl. We have new government, new federal government. I can't have you sit down and talk about where federal funding began. You're the first one I've talked to about this since the old guy came back to be the new guy and decreeing that he's taking the Gaza Strip and Greenland and Panama, Lord knows whatever else. But when he starts talking about federal workers internally, it's one thing to threaten Canada or Mexico, but on federal workers, I only think of like Social Security, you know, all the basic things you think about. And then I bring it down to, is the bridge going to get built? That's a whole transportation issue.
Yep.
But then I think about, I call you a do-gooder, if that's okay for me to say. But these quasi state-run, federal-run, funded, historic 100 years or more doing things in the community, whether it's Salvation Army, any of these places that do good things that I try to spotlight, at the heart, maybe it's not the aorta is federal, but it's certainly, you know, part of the nervous system of every organization like yours.
Yeah, I mean, federal funding helps do a lot of things. And the reality is a lot of the federal dollar goes to local organizations ultimately to deliver services that the government is funding. So, you know, for us, we're about a third of our revenue comes either directly or indirectly from the federal government.
A third,
yeah.
Now, that doesn't come in the same way that we would think about it. It comes in other names, right? Like it comes. So you say your federal money is a program that someone went to Washington, D.C., maybe in the 1950s or 60s or 70s, and continue to lobby on behalf of, hey, the Y's so important that it, and it's such an institution that it needs, we need Washington money, right?
Well, yeah, in our case, the largest part of that is Head Start, which we're the largest provider of Head Start in the state of Maryland, but Head Start is being delivered throughout the entire state by many different folks and across the country.
Head Start, is that 3-, 4-, 5-year-old, 6-year, is that what that is, preschool?
Yeah, Head Start is a federal program created in the 1960s by Lyndon Johnson.
So that was right.
Great
See
Society
right.
program, some of which worked well, some of them didn't, but it's really been one of the most successful programs to help kids of families who are at or below the federal poverty level be prepared to enter kindergarten, ready to read, ready to roll.
And it's, well, they've done a good enough job of branding it that an idiot from Dundalk who has a radio show actually knows what it is.
Yeah, there you
go. Like, literally, I knew what it was.
There you go. And what's yes, it focuses, there's both early Head Start, which works with young, with mothers who haven't even birthed their child yet. So it helps a young mother in.
Is that WIC?
No. WIC may be another program that
okay.
she receives.
I'm just thinking of pregnant mother programs because I had a pregnant mother in my life at one point.
Sure. Well, early Head Start helps pregnant women who are at or below the federal poverty level ensure that they're ready to have a child, and then carries them early in sort of in the first year. And then the regular Head Start program will pick up at age 2 through 5, really more through 4 now because we have universal pre-K in Maryland. And it really, it provides what we would think of as traditional preschool programming, but it also provides a whole bunch of wraparound services for these families. So
daycare-ish kind of things, too,
well,
right?
Beyond, well, it's not simply daycare. So we're not just watching kids. We're educating them. We're helping them develop so that when they enter kindergarten, they are ready to be successful. And, in fact, the kids that come through Head Start are actually further ahead than the average Maryland kid who hits kindergarten.
So you got 60 years of data to back that up, right?
Yeah, that backs up. So, and it's a really important...
It's better to have kids in structure earlier. It's better to have them in professional guidance. Yeah. It's literally.
It's better to... It gives them all the both educational and developmental opportunities they need. It puts them with caring adults who are well-trained. It allows them to understand some of the socialization that all of us as little kids need to learn a lot of things.
Don't pull her hair.
Right.
Things like that. Share.
So,
right? Yeah, there
exactly.
You go.
You know, Head Start's a really important program, and it's delivered locally here in Central Maryland by the Y and other organizations. But we're the largest of all of those in terms of the amount that we do. And so that program is really important. And I'm a taxpayer, you're a taxpayer, right? So we should scrutinize every dollar that is spent by our federal government. But I can tell you as a sort of lifelong business person that is a good, as a community and as a country, the return on that investment is huge. It's huge.
One third of, so it's a lot of money. It's 30 some odd million dollars you're getting at this here for Central Maryland and why. So let's start at the beginning. John Hoey's here. We're at Coco's. It's I call it Crab Cake Row. It's a cup of Super Bowl. When people hear the why, and I sort of jumped into it, I don't know exactly how many centers. I know there was one in Dundalk Town. Every community sort of had one at one point. Right. I think anybody familiar with Memorial Stadium, they can watch us from last year talk about the Memorial Stadium story and that being the why.
Yep.
What is the modern why for everybody out there in any neighborhood from Essex, Middle River, Perry Hall, Bel Air, anywhere around here? You mentioned Carroll County. Maybe we were having lunch here earlier. Yep. How many centers? How many people? How many employees? Give everybody a scope of what the why is.
Right. So we're a pretty large, comprehensive organization, and we don't do just one thing. We do a lot of different things, right? So we have – I'll try to run through some basic stats here.
Okay, sure.
Without, you know – because
elevator speech.
It's very hard to describe us in one sentence. But at our core, what we're doing is helping to build healthy, connected, inclusive community around Central Maryland, right? And so to do that – what most people will know us by is our large Y family centers. We have 12 of those around the region.
Well, when I think of what is the Y, if somebody said, I'd say it's a community center.
It's a building. Right.
Yeah, it's a place that brings people together to build better community.
Right. And so that's at the core of it. But in surrounding all that are what I just mentioned, things like Head Start. So we have 30 Head Start sites around the region. We have, we're responsible for over 30 community schools around the region, and we are providing consulting to several counties on how to implement their community school work. We have 6 preschools. We do 50 before and after school programs in schools around the region.
When you say community school, I want to stop you on that.
Right.
Define that. Define what a community, because I don't know that everybody.
No.
We try to do Schoolhouse Rock for civics. We'll do that in our next episode. But I don't think everybody's familiar with a community school.
Well, they wouldn't be. Community schools, let me start. Community schools is really a strategy. It's not a program. So, and it's really something that is now taken off federally, but has been adopted in Maryland as part of the blueprint. So the community school strategy is really about focusing on schools that are located in communities with high concentrations of poverty. So we all know you can build a beautiful new school in a community that's, has very significant challenges. But if if you don't have all the conditions that allow kids to come to school and learn, focus on learning, it's not going to happen, right? So what the community school strategy says that we want to provide a whole series of resources emanating from the school to help the kids and the families in that community be successful. So
above and beyond math and reading and writing and actual classes, I would know.
The school itself, the school, you know, has a curriculum. The teachers are teaching. The principal is leading. But the community, what we do, and the community school strategy says we put a community school coordinator in there, in these schools. And that person works with the school community, the parents, the faculty, and the students to determine what resources do they need to help ensure that kids are showing up to school, learning, not dropping out. So
that's sometimes clothing, transportation,
you name it, yeah,
child care, parents incarcerated, just on and on and on.
All those things that in, you know, the sort of prototypical suburban school. Like, you know, I went to a huge public school in New York, upstate New York, right? And there was definitely certain people, some people with who were dealing with poverty. But it
but most people got on the bus every day, went to school,
most
came
of us,
home.
Right.
Right. The American dream, right?
You,
right.
You got on the bus.
Had parents
you went to
when
school,
you got home. Got
you
right,
had
a, exactly.
You had great teachers who busted your chops.
Right.
And after school, you either got on the bus or you went and played sports or hung out in the library or whatever you did. And you went home and you had two parents.
And there's a lot of places, clearly, that's not the case, right? That's just not. Right?
That is not. Yeah. So in a community school environment, you've got to bring resources. So, yeah, you have food pantries in all these community schools that we work with people like the Maryland Food Bank to ensure that kids have kids and families have food. We have GED programs so that, you know, parents who haven't gotten their high school diploma can get that. We have, we ensure that there are after school programs, which we would typically run. Some of these things we work with partners.
Well, the interesting thing is that I think what I would say about what you're teaching me, and I've had a couple of community school people on, say it's a school for more than just the kids. We're thinking about more than just the kids. So, getting them in and getting a grade and getting them out. You know, that's what school has been in America.
Right.
And then there's after school drop-in and there's sports and the intramurals and it's, you know.
It's all these things that are engaging people to that really ultimately help ensure that when you the kids are in a classroom studying math or science or history or whatever they're doing, that they feel supported, they're fed. You know, like, again, we take for granted. When I went to school, I grew up in a big family. We didn't have a lot of money, but, you know, we had breakfast before we went to school. We got there. You know, I didn't really, if I came home with a bad report card, I didn't have anyone to blame but myself, right? But, you know, and my father made sure I understood that. But, you know, if you're showing up to school and you're not fed, you're hungry, you don't have a change of clothes, so you're wearing the same clothes you've been wearing for
three days. As an example for me, as a kid, I grew up in Dundalk in Colgate, right? Not in any way a rich place, blue collar. And I was talking to more people about this, especially as you get older. I lost a friend this week, and we're just talking about some of the kids in the neighborhood. You go in their house, and they didn't have furniture like you did.
Yeah.
I was a boy. Right. I mean, I'm 8, 9, 10. I didn't really... Some kids live with their grandparents. Some kids only have one parent. You're trying to navigate that in the 1970s. But as I go back, as you even talk about this, and I think about what would the line be, is that I got in line for lunch in the little cafeteria of Miss Renacha every day.
Right.
And some kids had a little blue ticket.
Yeah.
They had a free lunch.
Right.
And I was like, I want a free lunch. You know what I mean? Like as a kid.
How do
you know?
I get that?
Yeah. I mean, how do I get that? And I think my parents had to say, No. That's, you know, Richie's got a, you know, different situation or whatever. And I definitely knew some kids that had the blue tickets. And I didn't think at that time, stigma, you're 8 years old, you don't think they have less, they're poor, they're whatever that stigma would be. You don't think about that. But that was community school coming to my neighborhood, just making sure these kids had a lunch that I had to pay 65 cents for, but they got for free.
So it levels the playing field, right?
Sure.
So the things that... In other neighborhood schools, are not issues, are issues in spades in these schools. So you have the community school director, the coordinator, who's ensuring that these services are there. And it's a combination of partnering with folks, identifying all different kinds of things that are needed so that at the end of the day, the teachers are focused on teaching. They're not trying to be the social worker.
Take care of problems outside the scope of education.
They're not trying to figure out
how
to feed a kid who's starving when he shows up.
Right.
All those kind of things we, you know, so.
30 of those you have, you said.
So we're, we're responsible for 30 of those, which makes us, again, the largest community school provider in the region. And, you know, that's what I go back to, like, what the Y is really all about is building healthy, connected, inclusive communities. By the way, all the kids that are in a program in a community school, they're all members of the Y. The families are members. Every family that's got a kid in Head Start are members of the Y. All these programs, our view is everyone deserves access. Everyone deserves to be part of a community. So we don't view these services as all in silos. They all lead to being a member of the Y community and giving you access to these set big centers where you can be an equal. So you and I can walk in and let's say I'm on food, you know, I'm on food stamps and you're not. I may be paying a lot less than you, but we all have access to the same stuff, the same programs. You and I can swim in the same pool. We can be in the same youth and government program together, et cetera, et cetera. What we're saying is we don't want to live in a society where our access to things that we should all have is bifurcated, that only some people get to live a full life and other people can't. At the Y, our job is to figure out how to remove barriers. And that's why we have to do so many different things, right? We have to meet parents and families where they are, and we have to provide a range of services to them. I haven't even talked about mentoring. We do a ton of mentoring.
Well, you said two of the three words that the president, I'll never say that again. The guy running the country, equity, inclusion. You didn't mention diversity, but that's kind of built into it, I guess, at this point. These things have been vilified. You said inclusion just off the just as a part of your heart, you are, and the heart of the organization. And most organizations in this country that I would want to be a part of include diversity and inclusion, right?
Yeah.
So to vilify those kinds of terms at a street level, it's offensive to me.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, we've gotten into a world where we sort of have got, you know, we demonize certain words, sometimes people get performative about certain things. You know, the Y's been doing this work, and a lot of great organizations have been focused on ensuring that everyone can participate, right? So we can, my view is, I don't use those words because they've been vilified, but
you've been using them your whole life, though. They have meaning to you. They have real meaning to you.
What I joke is, like, you know, I have a little different perspective maybe than the most people who will run, you know, not-for-profits do about these kind of things. I had a great career before I did this.
In for-profit.
Yeah. And a lot of it was international. So I've spent a lot of my time professionally in countries and places where I look different. I was the one who stood out. Where I didn't really speak the language. I had to understand how to navigate. I love that, by the way. And as a kid growing up, I never thought I'd get that out.
Well, as a white man in America, you rarely walk into a room where, right, where...
So I have grown to love the fact that the world is a complicated place, that people have different, you know, they look different, they act different, they talk different. And that to me is like a strength of our country, and so I don't think about these things as a problem. I think about them as kind
an opportunity.
Like I joke, you know, like I would be mortified if I ran into too many people who looked like me and acted like me. That would be a bad thing, right? So, you know, diversity to me is just a fact. I don't know why we would argue over diversity. Like,
just look behind our shoulder. We do it right here, right?
Every 10 years in our country, we do a census, right? And then the census produces a lot of rich data. So, like, the data's there. I don't even know what we're debating, right? And the other thing is, if you're going to be an effective, whether you're a business trying to reach customers or you're an organization like ours trying to reach people in the community, I always tell our folks, it's that old, great old thing that, I don't know who said it first, but the way Wayne Gretzky was described, he was great because he was skating to where the puck was going, right?
Not where it was.
Right. And in, if you're going to be effective at what you do, you got to skate to where the puck is going. So the reason I bring that up is the community is always changing, right? So if we're going to be effective, we've got to understand those changes and address the community as it's becoming, not as it was.
So the, I need to get over with you and do a tour. I haven't been, you know, I mean, I got to come over and see the new, because I haven't done it. I mean, really haven't. I'm a full disclosure, I talk to you about it all the time. But I see this vision through you. You get so excited talking about it. Because you've been doing, how many years you've been running the Y?
I accepted this role in 2006.
20th year coming up.
19th year coming up. You know, you don't ever
take
any of those
years
for granted. What
are you the proudest of? 19 years, what would I have walked into your place the day I met you? And I met you right about then because you were in my building years ago at a Christmas party. I remember meeting you in the hallway outside of my house. And what would I have found then and what would I find now that would be different other than Wi-Fi and obvious technological things that have changed?
Well,
you know?
Candidly, everything's different. I mean, we're almost four times as large as we were then. We do so many more things. I think the intentionality, what I'm most proud of is that there's a real intentionality behind everything we do, and that we have a culture that is really focused on executing our strategy. I think back then the Y did some good things, but it was kind of random. There was a lot less work going on. Most of the buildings you'd walk into were pretty crappy, to be honest.
Only one I was in as, like, more times than not, the Dundalk Y. I mean, I grew up from Dundalk, you know. Folks would go over there and swim. My dad, I know what it looked like. I know where it was. I'd been in there. It had been a long time.
Yeah, and
I don't know if you found that in 1999 or 2007 that it had changed much. I don't know.
It's a funny story there. That Y was bought by the county years ago.
I've never heard of it in forever.
Then the county came, Jim Smith, when he was county executive, came to me and said, we have this building we own in Dundalk. By the way, it used to be the Y. And it's got a pool. Can you help us run it? So, you know, we've been running that portion of that building.
So if I go back, I'll recognize it.
It's reopening now.
Okay.
I'm glad I brought it up. It closed around COVID, and the county took almost 4 years to make the repairs they needed to make. So it's going to be reopening. So
look, I'm not going to get mad Johnny O's gone. We have all this McCaffrey.
No, I'm not mad.
Just saying, we got a new elementary school in Dundalk. I got a new elementary school at Colgate. I have a new high school at Dundalk. I sang the Dundalk High alma mater here on Monday.
I like people lifting Dundalk. The high school in Dundalk is quite attractive. I've been in there many times. We do some work in that school. Dundalk is different than it was, right? To me, that's a good thing. I was born in New York City. I grew up in upstate New York, but I'm still like a New York City kid at heart. When I was living in Manhattan in my 20s, to me it was like, and it still is, the greatest place, because over the course of the day, you would experience people from every almost every country.
It's awesome.
It was like, and it was so invigorating, right? It was invigorating. That city exists because
of diversity.
My, great-grandparents came to this country from Ireland, right? Not unusual. You know, and people have been coming to New York City for 200 years.
You want me to sing some Neil Diamond for you?
No.
Far?
No, no.
They've been traveling far.
So that idea that this is the place people come to.
Everywhere
to
around
really,
the world.
You know, for,
they come into America.
Oh,
they do, though.
I understand.
But
I
mean, that, but they're, that's,
but
that's what that's
is,
about.
Like,
it's true, though.
When,
I mean, I'm not laughing. I'm smiling.
But when did that become demonized?
Yeah, I don't know. The minute there were more of us Latin Venezuelan
right.
than there were people that looked like they were from Ireland, I guess. I don't know.
But, you know, every when the Irish started coming over, the Irish were the outcasts.
Oh, no question.
Because we were Catholic and we weren't really to be trusted. And we did all the crap jobs. You know, my father and his family, we grew up in the ghetto part of Harlem where African Americans in Harlem wouldn't live. That left the least of it, the little groundling Irish lived in. You know, so like we've been doing that to the latest arrivals forever in this country, right? Again, I love history. I'm constantly reading history. I wish more people would read history and understand sort of where we all came from. And I think it would be helpful for us. Look, the immigration system in this country needs to be reformed. That's been a need for 15 years. You know, there's only one entity that can really do that. It's called the U.S. Congress, right? It needs to be reformed. There's been so many. So that's, I think any thinking human being would agree with that. But the idea that we don't want certain people from certain countries to come to this country is just not our history. It's just not who
we are. It doesn't make up any room I've ever been in a city in this country or any organization like the Y. Quite frankly, any decent school, any decent business, diversity is strength. I think that's been borne out over our country for 250 years.
Yeah. I mean, it's not
at least the last 150. Let's start with that.
It's not complicated.
Right?
And over time, you know. Oh, the other thing I always like to say, we're all kind of mutts, right?
Absolutely.
Over time, different races, different ethnic groups intermarry, and like so we all have a little bit of, you know, I kind of my Irish heritage is the biggest part of me. I know I got other things in there. You got other things. That's a strength. That's good.
I'm going to DNA me, 24andMe me. John Hoey is here. He runs the Y of Central Maryland. He runs a whole bunch of different places and things. I wanted to ask you just on the Y side of things and your people here and the city. The city is because this is Baltimore Positive. We sort of did this to talk about Baltimore. What do you see in Baltimore through Brandon Scott's term, through COVID, through first Trump, second Trump, Biden, money, this, the bridge going down, us trying to rebuild the city to some degree, crime, we'd say crime's down a little bit in certain ways, murders are down in a certain way. What, on a daily basis, give me a state of the city as you see it, because you drive around the city.
Yeah, and I live in the city. So, you know, I'll go back to kind of my theme. I think the city continues to evolve. I think the city in many parts of the city are definitely rebounding. I think Baltimore as a city has a lot of untapped potential. That's what I see is we haven't lived up to our potential, but we could. And you know, that's not a political statement. I think we've got a lot of elected officials who are working really hard. So I'm not going to comment on the political side of it. It's, you know, to me, if you're willing to go out there, run for office, put yourself out there, then, I respect you.
And answer questions and try hard.
Questions.
And try hard. Be accountable.
Right.
That's all.
That's all we can ask.
Try
for.
To do what you say you're going to do. That's
right.
All I ask, because it's not easy.
But to me, Baltimore needs to start attracting back families. It needs to be where you have healthy neighborhoods, where people want to live. And We have some great neighborhoods like that in Baltimore. We're sitting in one right now.
Absolutely.
But we have too many where, which I think there's a lot of good people trying to live, but it's really hard. And, you know, we at the Y, we serve a lot of those, you know, neighborhoods. We've got Head Starts in those neighborhoods. We're the community school providers in those neighborhoods.
And that is the job generator, you know, giving you skills.
Yes.
To be employable, to contribute to our society, right?
And my takeaway in spending time in those neighborhoods is you have you have people who really want what everyone wants. They want to live a decent life. They want a job. They want their kids to be safe. They want their kids to go to school. All of that. But there's too much going on around them, which is making that really difficult. And Baltimore, you know, look, Nestor, you and I know that there's a lot of people in this community, and I get it, who will not come into the city.
I'm trying to change that every day.
And
you
so
know, I go into the city 3 days this week. I mean, I'm in the city every day. I lived in the city for 19 years. I didn't leave it because I didn't like it.
No.
If I didn't like it, I wouldn't come back. I would go to Maui. I like it better. I'm not going to lie.
Maui's
Baltimore's
nice.
Cool.
Maui's
but,
nice.
You know, I'm Kihei would be better. You know, that's all I'm saying.
But I think, you know, we need a healthy city. And so, I'm an optimist by nature. I see that this kind of stuff, look, nothing's ever going to be perfect. But I think we've got to do a better job of investing in neighborhoods and understanding that it's going to take a very significant effort by a lot of different parties who have a common goal to turn some of this stuff around. It can't just be done by, you know, by the government. It can't just be done by the private sector. It can't just be done by not-for-profits. What we've lacked in the city of Baltimore is a real coherent strategy. And that's really hard to come by. But cities that have improved a lot, they have a fundamental strategy, and they stick to it.
Well, they also have a coalition of business people and leadership that moved Baltimore forward in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
And whatever way you would say, it was a group of bankers, leaders, people of affluence and wealth that didn't want to run from the city or buy the newspaper to wreck the city. They were trying to really contribute to the city, you know?
Yeah, and I still think there's a lot of people who want to be helpful, but I don't think they've been galvanized.
Correct. I would agree with that.
And so
I meet them every day. I meet all of you every day trying to live. By the way, John Hoey's here. I want to wrap things up with you. The most important thing isn't that fascism's come to America or some guy from South Africa's taking over all of our information or that the world's best crab cakes are here in Baltimore and I'm sitting at Coco's. Do we have enough pitching? Give me this. How are you feeling about the Orioles? Let's get to something really important here.
I think they're going to need more starting pitching.
See, I knew that you were going to say that because you're a baseball man, John.
I'm a baseball fan.
You're a baseball man.
I think, you know, talk about leadership. Everything starts with leadership.
Well, they got new leadership.
They've got a new owner. Yeah. They've got, I think, a great general manager. So they're a really well-run team. And I think the question is, are they going to really be willing to invest? Baseball's a, you know, no salary cap. And so it's a kind of a, it's different than the NFL where everybody ultimately can't.
The Dodgers are going to spend a little more. So are
the Dodgers spend a lot more. And, you know, my team, the Mets, we're not afraid to spend either. I think the Orioles are going to have to figure out how to be competitive in this landscape, but I think they got the right people in charge. So that's what you know.
You would look a little like Oscar Madison if you put that Mets hat on. I don't.
I love Oscar Madison.
John Hoey is here. He's at the Y. Tell everybody what they can do and how they can help you, just in a general sense. There's Ys in every neighborhood.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we always need your support. You know, go on to ymaryland.org. Join a Y. Volunteer. We have lots of opportunities to volunteer. Go on our website to look for that. And ultimately, I think at the end of the day, just do something positive for your community. That's the most important we can all do. We can all complain, but I'm more interested in the doers than the complainers.
John Hoey from the Y, he drops the mic on that. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery, as well as Wise Markets. Not the Y, but Wise Markets. We call them Wise Conversations. Big appreciation, everybody makes it happen. Liberty Pure Solutions as well. I had Leonard Raskin on. We have these magic 8-ball. I love the magic because I can rub it. I have a thing I can give away now. And it's not Ravens season anymore, but I do have here in attendance TJ Humphreys, who was the Ravens Tickets for Life winner last year, who works as a specialist in helping people get back, putting their lives back together. He's in recovery himself, and we're going to meet TJ in a couple minutes. I don't have a Ravens ticket to give him away, but I do have a bunch of these at Coco's. Thursday, we will be at State Fair in Catonsville. Friday, we will be moving our show up to Cooper's North, where I'll have some gumbo to honor the Super Bowl. And then next Wednesday, Harford County at Libs Grill. We have Harford County Executive Bob Castley, who I've never met before. He'll be out with Joe Slivka, who I know too well, and a bunch of other folks. Nick up at Libs Grill, and I think I have some council people. I have all sorts of things going on in Harford County next week, so we'll be there. We're getting back down to Fadley's. I had a snafu on Tuesday. I'm not going to admit what I did until the week's over, but it was my fault. I am Nestor, back for more from Coco's. It is the Maryland Crab Cake Tour and a cup of soup or bowl. Highly recommend. You ever had the cream of crab here?
I've had a taste of it.
It's phenomenal.
It's good. It's anything related to crab here.
I got talked into this by Damien at Fadley's and as well Marcella here at Coco's. They have delicious crab soups. They have. It was a Costas on Monday. My wife loves the Maryland crab at Costas. I love the cream of crab here just as a general. Okay. So my wife said, you know, oysters, crab cakes, you've done this before. Why don't you do a crab soup tour?
Oh, yeah.
So I'm going to do crab soup in August of this year. I'm going to go around the state. It's such a beautiful time to go to Ocean City, move around, go Western Maryland.
Yeah.
And I'm going to try crab soups everywhere on recommendation. And right now, and I've told Marcella this, right now the cream of crab here, I need to find something that's going to compete with it.
All right.
All right? That's how good the cream of crab is here.
It's a good challenge.
Yeah, well, that and the coconut shrimp, but you all know that. I am Nestor, back for more. We're Coco. Stay with us. We're doing a cup of soup or bowl. It's Baltimore Positive.